I'd like to welcome you at this time to the afternoon session of the October panel for the Court of Appeals. My name is David Arteburn. I'm from Papillion, and I am here for the first case only and will be presiding as to the first case only this afternoon. To my right is Judge Mike Pirtle from Omaha. To my left is Judge Everett Imbody from Wahoo. I would like to remind the participants today that these cases are live streamed. If there's anything of a sensitive nature, you should keep in mind that this is a live streamed broadcast. I will call the names of the cases, call the name of the case, and I will call it a second time for purposes of the streaming. But the first case is Antons versus Antons. All right, the appellant may approach. This is Antons versus Antons.
May it please the court. My name is Adam Richard Little of the law firm Ballew Cobalt Hazen. I'm the attorney representing the appellant in this case, Angela Clark, formerly known as Angela Antons. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. We are before this court today because the district court erroneously awarded joint physical custody without any best interests analysis and in direct violation of the Nebraska Parenting Act, Section 43-2932, with respect to domestic intimate partner abuse. Before I address the issues, would the court like a brief recitation of the facts, or may I move on to my argument?
I'm familiar with the facts. Move on.
There are two issues present here today, Your Honors. They're interrelated, and the first one is that there is an abuse of discretion in awarding joint physical custody in this case, as there were no specific findings, and the award of custody was not in the child's best interests. Now, related to that is the second issue, that there is an abuse of discretion for failure to make specific written findings as required by Section 43-2932 with respect to domestic intimate partner abuse. I'm going to address these issues in reverse order, as they, the first one is the most important and most obvious abuse of discretion, that there was a failure to make specific written findings in light of domestic intimate partner abuse. Now, this is threefold. First, there must be a preponderance of the evidence of domestic intimate partner abuse. Here, the appellee was convicted of a July 27, 2014 domestic assault. Now, once there is preponderance of the evidence, 43-2932 is mandatory. That statute requires the court to make very specific written findings to address that domestic abuse. Failure to do so is an abuse of discretion. And finally, Mr. Antons failed to meet his burden of proof in showing that joint custody would not endanger either the minor child or Ms. Clark. The broader second issue...
Yes. And the trial court never made that determination.
Correct. It did not.
So are you thinking that we would have the authority to make that decision, or do you think that it needs to be remanded back for the trial court to decide?
This court absolutely would have the authority to do so, as the Nebraska Supreme Court has addressed this very issue in Flores v. Flores v. Guerrero in 2015. In that case, very similar facts to the case at hand. The father was convicted of third-degree domestic assault, and he was sentenced to probation, identical to the case at hand here. Likewise, the records of that sentencing were entered into evidence in both cases.
But in that case, they ended up agreeing that the lower court had not handled this properly and had not followed the statute, but then they reversed and remanded for further proceedings in the lower court.
Yes, they did, Your Honor, for purposes of making those findings and making determination as to the custody award. However, the Nebraska Supreme Court did hold that it is a mandatory statutory requirement, and in and of itself, failure to make the specific findings required by 2932 is an abuse of discretion.
But I understood the question to be, if we agree with that, is that a decision we can make, or do we need to send it back to the lower court? And I think the answer to that is we need to send it back to the lower court.
Yes, Your Honor, that is certainly an option what the court has available. The standard review in this case is de novo on the record, and this court does have the authority to make that determination if they believe that the record is clear enough as to what that custody determination should be.
But the lower court didn't do a best interest analysis, did it?
No, it did not, Your Honor, which
would,
is an additional...
Would that have to be done also if we found that it was error?
Yes, Your Honor. And this court has done on numerous occasions performing that best interest analysis. For example, in Trag v. Speer, or the Supreme Court, went through a very detailed 13-prong analysis of what that best interest is, both the statutory and non-statutory factors. And so I would argue and urge this court that it does have the authority to make that determination based on the facts that exist on the record before this court.
So if we disagree with you and decide that this determination first needs to be made at the trial court, and then we review for abuse of discretion, do we remand the matter for just a determination under 2932, or do we do total best interest requirement?
Your Honor, it would be a total best interest requirement, as the analysis under 432932 is one of the factors of a best interest analysis.
Do you have any authority that requires that there be a specific finding as to best interest when the trial court determines custody?
Yes. The Parenting Act itself requires that the court only award custody as it's consistent with the child's best interests. And numerous cases before the court, again, I'll point to Supreme Court Trag v. Speer, in which the court went through a detailed analysis of that.
I understand there's a lot of cases where they have gone through it, but is it required?
I believe it is, Your Honor.
Okay, why do you think that?
Because if the court is unable to make specific findings as to what is in the best interest of the child, there's no basis for this court to make a determination whether that finding was an abuse of discretion. The statutory factors, as well as the non-statutory factors set forth in previous case law, set out a test for the court to go through and make that determination. Simply put, as occurred here, without that detailed analysis, there was no way for this court to make any determination on whether or not the court considered proper factors. For example, certain factors cannot be determinative as to a custody award. In Kamal v. Imraz, the district court had made a determinative ruling that the parties' conflict with one another prevented a certain custody award. And on appeal, the court reversed that and found that such a factor, while important in the overall analysis, is necessary, it is not in itself determinative. That is an example of why it is necessary for the court to make that analysis.
Thank you.
Now, turning back to the first argument that the district court completely ignored the incidents of domestic intimate partner abuse in this case, they failed to make the specific written findings as required by 2932, and thus was an abuse of discretion. Now, the first is that there is a preponderance of evidence of domestic intimate partner abuse. Mr. Antons assaulted Ms. Clark on July 27, 2014. He attacked her. He dented a refrigerator with her body. He broke her scapula, severely sprained her wrist, and left several contusions. All of this occurred in front of the minor child. This is unacceptable, and the court's failure to address it is an abuse of discretion.
Now, as I understand the testimony, there was testimony from him that it didn't exactly happen that way.
That's
and,
correct.
And so there's maybe a difference of opinion as to the facts of the incident itself. But isn't the fact that he entered a plea of no contest and was found guilty is what requires that this section then applies and there has to be the analysis?
Yes, sir.
As opposed to the actual facts that the place, it's up to the trial court to make those determinations at this point.
That is correct. The convention in and of itself is sufficient to trigger the mandatory nature of 2932. I emphasize the nature of those facts, and certainly, again, there are always two sides to every story. However, there is a predictable pattern here. The record is replete with incidents where Mr. Clark, or Mr. Antons, had lashed out and abused her. He admitted onto two separate occasions of striking her and striking her in the face with an alarm clock, albeit accidentally. However, each time he would do so, he would justify his actions as well as then blame her for acting crazy, which is one of the oldest abuse excuses in the book. The court's failure to address this in its ultimate order is an abuse of discretion, and the fact that the court addressed it in its temporary order, yet failed to even mention it in its final order, further indicates that the court did not properly consider this. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Amy Martinez. I represent the appellee, Nathan Antons, who is actually present here in the courtroom this afternoon. The good news is we do agree that there are two issues for your review in this case. First of them is a fact dispute. That's the best interest analysis. The court is very clearly aware of both issues. The second issue is really the legal issue as to whether Judge Merritt complied with statute 43-2932. The first issue as it relates to the fact differences really is whether you believe Ms. Clark or whether you believe all of the other witnesses, including the expert witness, Dr. Lisa Blankenau, who is a very well-known and reputable psychologist, as well as some objective observers who had an opportunity to see Ms. Clark's behavior. When you look at a decision like this, and I've been up here many times on the other side of this arguing that the facts should have turned out differently, but it is very clear that the standard as it relates to custody and parenting time determinations are left initially to the decision of the trial court for an abuse of discretion. And it comes down to who the court chooses to believe. In this case, I think it's very clear who the court chose to believe. Unfortunately for Ms. Clark, it was not Ms. Clark.
Is the court free to disregard the conviction?
No, I don't think the court is free to disregard. I think the court has to address the conviction. And I agree with Mr. Little, who says that, of course, the statute sets out that once there is this conviction, there is a presumption. And I agree also with Judge Imbody, who said there's a fact dispute in this case. He actually pled no contest. He told the court, and his belief was that she may call Jet, the son, to testify, and he didn't want to do that. So he pled no contest. Nonetheless, there is a conviction, and it's out there. And I think that establishes the preponderance of evidence. After that, I think it's up to Mr. Antons to be able to overcome that preponderance, which I think is clear from the record that he did, both from the record and from the court's ruling.
But the court didn't really say that.
The court did not say that.
Isn't that the problem?
It is. It is exactly the problem. And substantively, I think that it is there. I would submit to the court that the information is there, the conclusions are there. It's kind of like the old days where you don't show your math, right? So you get the right answer, but you don't show your math. And unfortunately, I think the statute requires that some of the math be shown. I would suggest to you, if you actually don't require the specific language, I am making specific findings that it is appropriate and in the child's best interest that the preponderance of evidence has been overcome by thus and such, and you look to the provisions, I think it's very clear that the provisions about exchanges at school, the provisions about the Talking Parents app, those are intended to address the issues that were raised by Ms. Clark.
But doesn't the Flores case pretty much require, I mean, that seemed to me pretty on point, that when you don't deal with the statute, you have to send it back, and you have to deal with the statute.
And that may be the answer. I think it is possible that there is some way to distinguish Flores from this. In Flores, the conviction was different. It wasn't the no contest plea. It wasn't a fact dispute about what happened that served as the basis for that conviction. I will confess I did not read the entire record in Flores. I don't know. But in this case, in our case, we had an expert actually come out and address the issue. Dr. Blankenau addressed the issue. And I think when the court made those determinations that it could be implied based on that presumption being overcome. I would suggest in Flores that it's unclear whether that presumption it was clear.
And if there is a violation of the statute, I would assume that you would prefer that it go back to the trial judge who heard the evidence and observe the witnesses as opposed to us trying to make that call off a old record.
Yes,
is that fair?
That is our request, that if you decide that the form was not sufficient and that perhaps the court did not address all of the issues that you need to address, that it be remanded with specific directions that the court make a determination and make whatever findings are required under the statute.
Was this issue not discussed with the court prior to her entering the amended decree?
I apologize, Your Honor, and I think Mr. Little and I are both
that's
in
right.
situation.
You
we were not trial counsel.
Thank
I apologize.
You. Thanks.
Ms. Martinez, if we remanded it back for determination under 2932, does that bring in all the factors of best interest that need to be reviewed, specifically by the trial court?
I think what I'm going to say is responsive to your question, and if not, let me know. But as it relates to the best interest determination, I think the courts are always required to address best interest. And I think in this case, the court did address best interest, not in the way that the Supreme Court did in my case, which, by the way, was Schrag versus Spear, but it did not go through the 13 points or whatever. But it did say I'm making a best interest decision. And that's why, as Judge Pirtle's saying, I would much prefer this case go back down where she actually did the analysis, maybe didn't show her work, but has it on paper. So in response to your question, I don't think, and I was just rereading this as you were asking this question, I don't see anything that says, you now, once this happens, you're now required to delineate the best interest calculation. So I think the answer to your question is no,
and
unless you think it's yes.
I'm not aware of any case that says that there has to be a specific discussion of all those various aspects in order to come to the conclusion as to what's the best interest. I think it's the best practice to go through that to accomplish it. But I'm not aware of anything that requires it. And even though this would require an evaluation on this particular issue, which is one of the criteria, I don't think that it really requires to go back and do the whole thing, but I'm wondering if maybe it should.
I find your answer comforting because this is an issue that comes up often in these cases, is how did the judge arrive at the conclusion? And there's no requirement that there be that best interest. And I'm sure the court's well aware of the legislative history on this. When the Parenting Act came out and there's revisions to this, whether the court in every case should be required to lay out the best interest analysis to be able to have an appellate court or parties review how that determination was made. And for I think a multitude of reasons, I'm not aware of any authority that says that it has to be done. And I would submit to you that this particular statute requires an analysis of the issues in the statute, but not of the bigger umbrella.
But should we be saying that you shouldn't just consider this one aspect in determining the best interest?
Absolutely.
And so when you don't have anything that sets out the various requirements of consideration and who you're saying that the evidence favors, the father or the mother, and you go through the whole analysis, and then you can come to a conclusion. Everybody understands exactly what your thought process was, whether they agree with it or not, and gives you then something that we can review, and you can argue. So I'm puzzled by that, that if we send this back down and say, you just are required to do a review under 2932, that's just going to be one of those criteria, and it might come up with one answer, but it may not be the best answer. You understand what I'm saying?
I do. And I'm out of my rebuttal time. I would suggest to you that it's a little bit like, and if you just stay with me for a second, sort of like going to the movies, right? The analysis is the movie, okay, best interest. You go and you see the movie. Sometimes there are certain situations where you get to stop by and you get to get popcorn, right? Like there's a separate little side issue over there about popcorn. And it may enhance your movie experience. It may not. You don't know. If in this case, 2932 is like the popcorn where if you have that as part of your experience, you have to address it. It still doesn't necessarily affect the storyline, right? It may impact part of it, but not the whole storyline. So if, for example, one of the factors is relationship of a child with each of the parents, And this is, as alleged in this case, is domestic abuse to another parent. That doesn't necessarily impact that parent's relationship with the father, nor the parent's relationship with the mother. So to say because you have this issue, you also have to circle back and now lay out all of these other factors that are really non-related to that, I guess I don't necessarily see the logic in doing that from a linear standpoint. Does that make sense? The last thing I would say is you said, should it, right? And what I would encourage this court to remember is we have the legislature for those kinds of things. So if those things are to be required, I think that that's a directive that the courts will need to take from the legislature. And at this point, they've declined to do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
How much time does Mr. Little have?
Your Honors, with my time remaining, I'll be very brief. I think we are all in agreement that there is an issue with the statutory language not being followed and whether or not we need to require a full best interest analysis. Simply put, I would strongly urge this court to require the lower court, if the court here does not make that determination itself as to the custody, that they require the lower court to make that determination as well. And specifically, with respect to joint custody, the focus there is to what is in the child's best interest is that when considering that award, the focus is on the parents' ability to communicate with each other and resolve the issues together, as this court held in Aguilar v. Schulte in 2014.
We've had several cases where the parents could not communicate very well, but we still either approved or authorized a joint physical and legal custody. So there is precedent for that.
Yes, there is, Your Honor. The distinction here, I would argue, is that being able to get past differences and being completely unable to communicate to the level necessary to effectuate that joint custody is a distinction that must be made, and one here that is clear. Simply put, if you look at the record de novo, it is replete with evidence of the parties' disdain for one another. The sheer animosity between the parties, partially stemming from this assault, is a significant barrier to effective communication. These parties are not able to jointly parent their child, and we would urge the court to require the lower court to make a best interest analysis that takes that into consideration as precedent. With that, I would ask the court reverse and remand as to custody, and if the court will not do so, please reverse with instructions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.